Translation. My dear Krishna, formerly, when you were staying in Mathura, you sent Uddhav to teach me speculative knowledge and mystic yoga. Now you, yourself, are speaking the same thing. But my mind doesn't accept it. There is no place in my mind for Jnana Yoga or Dhyana Yoga. Although you know me very well, you are still instructing me in Jnana Yoga and Dhyana Yoga? It is not right for you to do so. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The process of mystic yoga, the speculative method for searching out the supreme absolute truth, does not appeal to anyone, does not appeal to one who is always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. A devotee is not at all interested in speculative activities. Instead of cultivating speculative knowledge or practicing mystic yoga, a devotee should worship the deity in the temple and continuously engage in the Lord's service. Temple deity worship is realized by the devotees to be the same as direct service to the Lord. The deity is known as Archa Vigraha or Archa Avatar, an incarnation of the Supreme Lord in the form of a material manifestation, brass, stone or wood. Ultimately, there is no difference between Krishna manifest in matter or Krishna manifest in spirit, because both are his energies. For Krishna, there is no distinction between matter and spirit. His manifestation in material form, therefore, is as good as his original form, Satchit Anand Vigraha. A devotee constantly engaged in deity worship according to the rules and regulations laid down in the Shastras and given by the spiritual master realizes gradually that he is in direct contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, he loses all interest in so-called meditation, yoga practice, and mental speculation. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svapanantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pramami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Just going to read the translation one more time. So Shrimati, Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his mood of Shrimati Radharani, which has been drawn out by the ecstasy of dancing in front of Lord Jagannath, goes on to say to Krishna, My dear Krishna, formerly, when you were staying in Mathura, you sent Uddhav to teach me speculative knowledge and mystic yoga. Now you yourself are speaking the same thing, but my mind doesn't accept it. There is no place in my mind for Jnana Yoga or Dhyana Yoga. Although you know me very well, you are still instructing me in Jnana Yoga and Dhyana Yoga. It is not right for you to do so. Today we're celebrating as a community. Everybody, people who visit on Sunday, people who stay in the temple, people who visit every day and serve every day. Although we've had the actual festival day on Thursday of Gaura Purnima, today we're going to celebrate. So many thousands of people are going to come today. And many of those thousands of people are going to come today and they don't really know who Lord Chaitanya is. And we're all sitting here, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, not just having a full systematic process for the most perfect realization, the most perfect relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but one which is completely and directly under the shelter and instruction of Lord Chaitanya. We know who Lord Chaitanya is, or at least have a way by which we can understand who Lord Chaitanya is because of Srila Prabhupada. Many people will come today and they have no idea who Lord Chaitanya is. People are still confused about the difference between demigods and God, still confused about the difference between Radha and Krishna, still confused about the difference between an individual person and God. And then you have Lord Chaitanya, who's so magnanimous, he's even more confusing. So, I'm sure, I have no doubt devotees sitting in this room know who Lord Chaitanya is. But if I reiterate in my class who Lord Chaitanya is or attempt to, please forgive me, because there are 8.4 billion people on this planet, and still the vast majority don't know who Lord Chaitanya is. At best, they may accept him as a saint, and a saint who is easily misunderstood. Because when we read Chaitanya Charitamrita, we are hearing the pastimes of the Lord and the teachings of the Lord as explained by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who says he observes some of these activities, and some of these, many he's taken from the diaries of Sarup Damodar Goswami. So when we read these pastimes, there are many things that Lord Chaitanya does which are against ordinary societal behaviors, ordinary societal expectations, and even behaviors of a devotee, behaviors of a sadhaka, especially when we get into his later pastimes, even pastimes like this. These words that Lord Chaitanya is uttering to Lord Jagannath, if we didn't know he's speaking in the mood of Srimati Radharani, you'd be wondering, what is this personality speaking? What is he? Who is he that he's saying to Krishna? He's saying to Jagannath, you sent Uddhav to teach us speculative knowledge and mystic yoga, but I'm just not interested in any of these. You'd wonder, right? The only reason we know is because it's been explained to us. So just coming back to this purport and this verse, and I do want to say a bit more about Sisi and Lord Chaitanya a bit later, but just coming back to this verse, Srila Prabhupada is explaining, first of all, that this mystic yoga, a process of yoga whereby one achieves lots of mystic opulences. You can become smaller than the small, bigger than the big, travel through time and space, you know, at the drop of a thought, not even the drop of a hat. Okay, our thoughts move quicker than hats, right? The drop of a thought. It's really not of any interest, neither is Jnana Yoga, understanding how the world works, not just in this world, but beyond. It's of no interest. And often as devotees, when we read that sentence, please be honest, how many have you read things like that and gone, oh yeah, that's not of any interest to me, that I don't really want mystic siddhis and I'm not that interested in Jnana Yoga, I'm all for bhakti, right? The mind tells us that. But the thing is, what we often don't realize is that the desire for mystic opulences, Jnana Yoga, Hatha Yoga, Karma Yoga, the reason they're considered mixed and not as pure and direct as bhakti yoga is because often when we're pursuing them, we are essentially trying to achieve some power in this world. And we're all seeking the same power in this world. It just looks different. What power are we seeking? We are seeking whatever power it takes to fulfill our desires and avoid distress. It doesn't matter what class someone is, what varna someone is, what ashram someone is, what religion they are, what training or background they've come from. If you look at every basic human being from young to old, we are systematically, day to day, looking for different ways to acquire power to maximize our comfort and minimize our distress, isn't it? Even when we're not doing anything, even when we are just thinking, when we're making plans of how to get out of our distressful situation and to make ourselves comfortable again, we are grasping at every kind of power. And you know what? I want to challenge you, because I had to challenge myself on this. Somewhere in there, we seek jnana and mystic opulences. Think about it. When we are trying to get out of a distressful situation, don't you force your mind to go and live in the future? Whether it's catastrophizing or glamorizing, you jump time in your mind. That's a mystic opulence. You're desiring an ability to be able to, oh, if I could just fast forward to this, if I could just predict. Or you're going back to the past to undo something because you're guilt-ridden and shame-ridden. And it feels so horrible to feel guilty and shameful, too uncomfortable. Let me get out of this. How can I turn back time? Oh, you want to jump time again? That's a mystic opulence. Do you see this, the subtle way in which we try to jump time and space? Why? We want to strengthen the idea of being powerful and being the center in this world. Okay, all of our mental cogitations, they're all about bringing ourselves back to the center. And in a powerful way, and we don't really want to be in the center and be weak. We want to be center and powerful. Okay, jnana, when we are, our mind is hankering for some, oh, I wish I could figure this out. Think about the things we desperately try to figure out. It's usually a solution to something that's causing us distress or a solution to gaining some freedom or pleasure, isn't it? That's jnana, it's a type of jnana. Jnana doesn't just relate to, you know, directly Krishna, also anything to do with his energies. Because actually, as this purport says, Krishna and his energies are the same. They are exactly the same. They are not separate. Actually, you know, people often overlook Srila Prabhupada's small books. Srila Prabhupada's small books are like buying a can of condensed milk. Because in Srila Prabhupada's small books, because he knows often this might be the only capacity someone has to read is that tiny little book that you can read on one train journey, okay? That gives you the sense, oh, yeah, I finished the whole book, you know? Our brains are becoming very pea-like. Soon they'll be like chia seeds. They'll be tinier and tinier. Okay, our capacity to concentrate is getting smaller and smaller. Okay, so we know this. You study the statistics of digital media. I think now the longest time somebody spends on a video is 7 seconds. I remember when I started doing radio work. Gosh, it's like 16, 17 years ago, at that time when I'd sit in meetings and they'd analyze how to keep the audience's attention, they would talk about how your average listener changes radio stations every 7 minutes. 7 minutes, 7 seconds. Such a fast deterioration in what, 16, 17 years? Now they say, get your message out in the first 1 second. If your message isn't out in the first 1 second, no one's going to hover on your video or your podcast or anything. I mean, it's impossible. So Prabhupada's small books, the point I was making was there's this one particular book, Renunciation Through Wisdom. And the fifth chapter of that, or the fifth essay, it's a collection of short essays. In that, Srila Prabhupada distills what Srimati Radharani and what Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita about buddhi yoga or bhakti yoga. Buddhi, this is not jnana. Buddhi is not jnana. Okay, buddhi is not even ordinary intelligence. Buddhi is transcendental intelligence. Okay, it is the super consciousness from the supramind, which we will come back to. And I just want to share a few things about the destructive effect of seeing Krishna and his energies as separate. And Prabhupada actually explains, yes, for the time being, in the beginning, we reject material nature because we don't understand it as the same as Krishna. But then he goes on and says, we may now reject this material world as illusory, but one day, with Krishna conscious vision, we will see its intimate connection with the Lord. In this stage of spiritual vision, we will see material things as objects of neither exploitation nor rejection. So Bhogatya goes, okay? This is all the things we have in our life, we tend to either love them or hate them, detest them or adore them. Such transcendental vision is attained by the process of Buddhi Yoga or Bhakti Yoga. We will then clearly see the truth of the following verse from Brahma Samhita. Okay, in this following verse from Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma says the three worlds are composed of the nine elements, fire, earth, ether, water, air, direction, time, soul and mind. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, from whom they originate, in whom they exist, and into whom they enter at the time of the universal cataclysm. So united are Krishna and his energies that there's romance even in creation. Yesterday we were studying the fifth chapter of the third canto of the Bhagavatam, and we were mesmerized because there's this one passage where it describes how the reason Mahatattva then glances over material energy and creates. It's so poetic, it's so romantic. It's because the internal energy, she's already awake and he's asleep. And so he wants to be just with her, just like the husband wants to be with the wife. I thought, wow, Krishna really is the personification of love. Even his creation of material energy is love-based. He wants to be with the feminine, with his Ladini Shakti, with Srimati Radharani, in whichever form, whether she's expressing herself as the external energy or the internal energy. Srila Prabhupada goes on to say that in this realized state, we perceive Lord Narayan's presence not only, and please listen to this so carefully, I had to read it six times, and I'm going to read it again. In this realized state, we perceive Lord Narayan's presence not only in all living beings, but also in all non-living things. When the darkness of ignorance cloaking our consciousness is dissipated by the merciful light of knowledge emanating from the spiritual master, we gain spiritual vision and can see that every object is directly linked with the Supreme Lord. Now, this is the bit I want you to really pay attention to. To see God everywhere and in every living entity is not the final word in self-realization. That is not the final word in self-realization. One needs to see him in all events, even going to the bathroom, all events, okay? In every activity, in every thought influencing everyone's life, every thought, including one's own. Two things are indispensable for acquiring such a vision. First, we must offer the results of all our activities to Lord Krishna. And second, every action we perform must be done exclusively as devotional service to him. We must constantly meditate on the fact that Lord Krishna is the only enjoyer and proprietor of every action. This sentence, you know, see him in all events, in every activity, in every thought influencing everyone's life, including our own. These are the words of Srimati Radharani. This is what she's trying to explain to him. She's saying to him, look, don't tell me to meditate on you. How can you tell me to meditate on you? It's just, I can't. I want to be with you. I want to serve you. Don't tell me to meditate on you. Don't tell me to know about you. This is useless. And we have some experience of this. When we have a great desire to experience something or someone, is meditating on that person or that object enough? If you said to me, oh, I'm so hungry. I feel like there's a hole where my stomach used to be. It's okay, my dear devotee. Just close your eyes and meditate on prasadam. You'll be quickly satisfied. study the ingredients of the next dish that's coming. You will be satisfied. What will you do? You will throw me out. Okay? You will throw me out. Do you have any idea what it feels like to be hungry? You have no idea. This is Srimati Radharani's plea. If we want to understand what spiritual advancement looks like, we have to see Lord Chaitanya's example. That there's this hunger, this insatiable hunger. We all know the pain of hunger. We all know the hunger pangs of the insatiable appetite for food, prasadam, but also for love. And that gives a hunger and a pain that we spend lifetime after lifetime, week after week, day after day, going from pillar to post, person to person, object to object, activity to activity, thought to thought, trying to satisfy. And Prabhupada here is saying, actually, in all of those things, events, activities, thoughts, everybody else, see Krishna. Because when you see Krishna, then that hunger will be satisfied. So this is what Srimati Radharani, Lord Chaitanya, in the voice of Srimati Radharani, is showing us the most advanced stages of bhakti. It's mahabhav, which is, there is no interest in the theory. There is no interest in the separated energies or opulences of the personality of God. The only interest is to love and serve. And Srila Prabhupada explains that this lack of interest isn't born of knowledge that, oh yeah, things here won't satisfy you. It's not born of things have just disgusted you here so much that you're just feeling, oh, I might as well just turn to Krishna now because, you know, it's just not having a good time here. No. He said what it's born of is there's so much deep attachment to Krishna. Everything else pales in comparison. There is a big difference between not doing something because we have an aversion to it, okay, versus being in a state, not doing something because we have an attraction to something better. And sometimes the mistake we make is we try to jump from that to, we jump from aversion to attachment. Right? We try and just make this big segue that, okay, well, let me just try and love everything and everyone because it's all Krishna. And then everything and everyone causes us pain. And then we go back to, you know, okay, now I hate these things. So now let me try and love Krishna because I hate these things. But, you know, just as dangerous as that is this in-between stage where we don't have taste for activities here, but we also don't have taste for Krishna. And sometimes as devotees, we just get stuck in that place because we feel this, oh, neutrality. Because neutrality feels better than suffering, doesn't it? Right? Getting to a point where, oh, this material world doesn't bother me that much. I also don't get that much satisfaction from it, but it doesn't bother me too much either. I just get comfortable. You know what happens? Have you ever been on a crowded train? And someone comes in, especially if you're in India. If you've been on a crowded train in India, you know, in England, on buses and trains, we have like seats 100, standing 50 people. They don't put signs like that on Indian trains because there's no point. Everybody will ignore it. So if you've been on an Indian train, whether you're standing or sitting, you think, yeah, I've made my space, right? And someone comes and just plonks themselves out. They're half on your lap. They don't care if they're man, woman, child, half on your lap, and they stare at you, like right in the face like this. Like, I'm here. What are you going to do about it? And I'm totally comfortable being half on your lap, you know? What do you do? In the beginning, you're like, oh my God, every atom of your being is get away from me. And then after a little, like, no, but you know, it's really important for me to keep my place. Okay? And you keep your place. And before you know it, you just become comfortable with the uncomfortable. You don't move to anything better. You just stay, don't you? You know, and then some of it might be because there's nothing better. But this is it. This is that in-between. And we have this in different parts of our Krishna consciousness, different parts of our life, where we just get comfortable. Becoming a pure servant, reattaining or recovering our natural identity is not comfortable. Because as Radharani is showing here, as Lord Chaitanya is expressing, it is deeply painful to be madly in love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because he will test you and push you in this world and beyond, but it is pleasurable when we stop seeing things as separated. So this mood of Srimati Radharani Where else do we hear about it? Where else do we read about it? You know, where else do we understand where that kind of devotion that defeats God, where it comes from, what it looks like, how to attain it? Nowhere, no other avatar. You can read all the Vedas. You can read Bhagavatam. Because even in Bhagavatam, we don't hear Srimati Radharani's words. They're certainly not described in Bhagavad Gita. They're not there in the Upanishad. Okay, so where else? The only time we get the privilege of hearing the voice of Mahabhav, seeing the behavior of Mahabhav, without any boundary, without any restriction, is in this most munificent and magnanimous incarnation of Lord Chaitanya. This very hidden in plain sight, confusing, contradictory, and merciful incarnation. So, before we say a bit more about that, you know, I was mentioning earlier that Srila Prabhupada says that this love, it's not something that's born of human sentiment. It's not something that's born of human psychology. Okay, human psychology and human sentiment are actually ultimately set up to maintain the false ego. And yes, they can be purified, but at best, they can be a bridge to our supra mind and our super consciousness. They can be a bridge to the soul. They'll never be the same. And we see how they're a bridge in Raganuga Bhakti in practice, but then there's beyond Raganuga Bhakti in practice, there is actual Ragatmika Bhakti, actual spontaneous devotion. So this is what we're hearing the words of. And Srila Prabhupada says that comes from the super consciousness of the supramind. Srila Prabhupada only uses this word supramind once. It's in the first canto, sixth chapter, verse 34. For me, it's like the best word in the universe. It's like something beyond the mind, supramind. But how? How do we do this? Now, chapters 19 through to 25 of Madhya Lila are Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. So yes, we have the Shikshastakam, but in terms of training his disciples, training the Goswamis, we see a lot of the teachings of bhakti, of this buddhi yoga, of bhakti yoga, are in these chapters. And in the 22nd chapter, in verse 100, we hear the six steps that we can take to achieving this buddhi yoga or bhakti yoga. And I'm going to share them with you because I have set them aside. Here we go. So, these six divisions of surrender. Okay, this is how do we surrender? How do we, whilst we are in a space where we cannot see everything as connected to Krishna, where we don't see him in every event, in every activity, in every experience, even every thought, including our own. What are the things that we can do? How do we live? What are the principles and attitudes we live by? And Lord Chaitanya says to Sanatana Goswami that the six divisions of surrender are the acceptance of those things favorable to devotional service, the rejection of unfavorable things, the conviction that Krishna will give protection, the acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian or master, full self-surrender, and humility. Yesterday, somebody asked me a question about how do we know what to do and when? This is the code, right? When something feels like it's scrambled, doesn't make sense, usually you think, you know, if you've ever done an escape room or a puzzle, you're looking for there's a key to the code, isn't there? How do I figure out what this pattern is in front of me? And we all live in patterns. All of us, we've got something in our life where it feels like a copy paste, doesn't it? Same situation, different person. Same reaction from us, different situation. There's a copy paste. Okay, so there must be a code. How do I crack this code so I don't keep end up ending up in Groundhog Day. The same thing over and over again, just a different person in a different situation. So this is the code. This is what Lord Chaitanya says. Actually, start off, accept those things that are favorable to devotional service. Sometimes we delude ourselves. We think, I'm really surrendered. I won't choose anything. I'll just see what comes to me. But all sorts of things come to us. Things come to us because of our karma. Things come to us because we're being tested. Things come to us because we've made an offense. Things come to us out of mercy. With such a jumble sale there, you need to know what to accept and what to reject. So accept those things that are favorable to devotional service. Lord Chaitanya says, reject those things that are unfavorable. Those things that are unfavorable, sometimes we like them. They're not sinful, but they're unfavorable for our devotional service, unfavorable for our copy-paste. Okay, so we have to all look at our copy-paste and see, in my copy-paste, what is it that's happening that I keep accepting that's unfavorable for my devotional service? It's not sinful. It's not against the four principles, you know. It's something I can easily hide from other people. People would just accept it as normal part of society. But for me, it's unfavorable to my devotional service. Reject those things. It's not about whether it's unfavorable in material life. It's not about whether it's unfavorable for the kind of body you're in, but it's unfavorable to devotional service. Third thing, conviction that Krishna will give protection. So these are attitudes, so a conviction that Krishna will give protection, the acceptance of Krishna as one's guardian or master, to be really fully convinced that somebody's going to give us protection, goes hand in hand with accepting them as our protector. We don't always accept Krishna. We talk about how he, you know, oh, please Krishna, accept me. But do we accept him? Do we accept Krishna as he is? Do we want to change him and modify him to fit him into our copy-paste? And then full self-surrender and humility. Srila Prabhupada explains that all of these things really only become activated under the guidance and service of the spiritual master and the association of pure devotees. I say and because we need both, okay? And we need them all the time. Association means actually receiving. Receive what's around us. So these six divisions of surrender, you know, you can write them. You know how people write self-help books and they'll give you, you know, seven steps to success or five ways to get rich quick or 10 ways to attract unconditional love in your life. Six aspects to surrender that we can choose. It's just easy. Situation comes or thought comes. So these things, see Krishna in your activities, in events, in thoughts, even your own, in other people. Accept thoughts that are not favorable to devotional life, reject them. That are those that are favorable, keep them. Right? Activities that are favorable, keep them. Activities that are unfavorable, reject them. Events that are favorable, accept them. Events that are unfavorable, reject them. And know that throughout all of that, Krishna will protect us. Accept his protection. Accept it. Accept the changes he makes in our life through his manifestation as time. We have a poor relationship with time. Our relationship with time reflects our relationship with Krishna. How we surrender to time reflects how we relate to Krishna. So full self-surrender includes how we not just use our time, but how we relate to it. Do we want to speed it up? Do we want to slow it down? Do we despise what time does for us? Do we fear what time brings? It means we're scared of Krishna. You scared when your gray hairs come? Something I'm reflecting on. Getting more gray hairs now. Am I scared? Am I going to try and hide it? This powerful self-surrender and humility. Humility, being ready to receive, being ready to receive everything that comes. We're coming to the end, so I'm just going to make a last few points. Srila Prabhupada in this purport, he really emphasizes deity worship. And it's interesting because we move from this how mystic opulence is and jnana yoga is not so attractive for the devotee because they have a natural attraction for Krishna. And Prabhupada then segues into actually if you want to develop a natural attraction for Krishna, engage in deity worship. Because what you're doing is immersing every single human aspect of the self. all the senses, the subtle body, everything, the intelligence, the false ego, touch, taste, smell, sound, everything, hearing, all of them are immersed in a form of the Lord which is non-different to him. Non-different. And why does that work? Whilst the mind and false ego and the human intelligence, well, that will never be the supra mind or the super consciousness. But they can, for them to be a bridge, they need to become like that. Right? We become that which we think about. Krishna says this in Bhagavad Gita, whatever state you shall remember at the time of death, that state you shall attain without fail. But we are always dying. So whatever we're thinking about now, that will be us in the next 5 minutes, tomorrow, next week. Okay? So when we engage in deity worship, and Prabhupada emphasizes temple deity worship because it's the highest standard of deity worship. We are the most likely, both by training and attraction, to be immersed in body, mind, and words. And by doing so, if you look at the activities of a pujari, whether at home or at the temple, when it's of a high standard, we are doing exactly the same things that we do in our eternal constitutional position. We're singing, we're dancing, we're playing instruments, we're making garlands, we're making jewelry, we're decorating, we are dressing, we are washing the lotus feet off, we're massaging the lotus feet, we put them to rest, we wake up with them. We have a full life with Krishna. And you know, this full life with Krishna, the only reason we know about being able to have a full life with Krishna and his associates is because of Lord Chaitanya. Because of Lord Chaitanya. This only one incarnation, who doesn't repeat Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, or go through the yoga ladder. Lord Chaitanya, CC, picks up where the Bhagavad Gita finishes. Bhagavad Gita finishes with, abandon all varieties of religion and surrender unto me. Krishna says, if you want to know how to surrender unto me, I'll have to show you. And I'll have to show you in the mood of my topmost devotee. Because even I can't show you. Only my topmost devotee can show you. Srila Prabhupada explains it very nicely in the introduction to Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says, just like sometimes there's a teacher you remember in school who's teaching you the alphabet, but sometimes they take your pen and they sit next to you and they say, and you write like this, A, B, C. They don't need to practice. They don't need to go slowly. They can even use those same letters to do high-level algebra. But they show you how to do it. So by Srimati Radharani's mercy, she allows Krishna to take on her mood, to understand her mentality, her temperament, to feel her heart, and give us not just full surrender, but pure love of God in its highest and most concentrated form. What's the highest and most concentrated form? Yes, of course, the highest and concentrated form is a personal relationship with God, right? A personal relationship with Krishna, where Krishna becomes the servant, where there is a relationship which isn't based on rules and regulations, but just spontaneous attraction, where we love God not for being God, but for being who he is, a person. But he goes beyond that. The most concentrated and highest form, not Vatsalya, not Dasya, not Sakya. Madhurya. Madhurya, where the love is so deep, so pervasive, so spontaneous, that it defeats Krishna. Where he says, Nabaryaham, I've got nothing left to give you, and I can never repay you. That kind of love. And this requires a contradictory personality. A contradictory personality who explains to us how to feel that love, how to develop that love, and shows us the consequences of being madly in love. He also has activities like every avatar that are there to bewilder the foolish. But what do all the other incarnations do to the foolish when they're bewildered? They kill them. But Lord Chaitanya doesn't do that. Lord Chaitanya and his associates bewilder everyone and then love them. What kind of mercy is that? I don't want you to understand me, and when you misunderstand me and throw things at me and cause my head to bleed, I will embrace you to my chest and give you full love of Godhead. I'm going to make you confused about who I am and still love you. I'm going to bring you to a point where you want to hate me and I will still love you. Who loves like that? Srimati Radharani. So I'm going to close with the teachings of Lord Chaitanya are essential for all of humanity. We want to be Krishna confident, but we want to be Lord Chaitanya confident. We do not have enough people, enough devotees, enough teachers, enough time. But we have to do it. We have to see how each of us can contribute to sharing with the world who Lord Chaitanya is. Because Lord Chaitanya is going to be misunderstood. And Lord Chaitanya gives us one thing that Srila Prabhupada, you know, he sums up really nicely. He translates the meaning of this phrase, Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the introduction to CC. He says Lord Chaitanya gives us a science that nobody else gives us. He teaches us about the character of the living force in immortality. He says, we understand how the living force operates in this world, but we don't understand how the living force operates in immortality. This is what Lord Chaitanya teaches us, that in immortality, we are fully wise and blissfully connected. Even our copy-paste is the most joyful experience. Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki jai, Gaura Purnima ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. We have a couple of minutes if anybody has any comments, questions, corrections, realizations. Prayojana Prabhu, you always have something to say. Please. It's not working. The 12 names of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, please.
It's called the 12 names of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Namastakam. And it completely describes every aspect. And it says, Chaitanya Krishna Chaitanya Goranga Devijanayaka Yatinam Dandanam Chaiva Nayasinam Chasiromanehi Raktam Bharadar Sriman Navadip Sudhikara Prema Bhakti Pradas Chaiva Sri Sachinandanas Tata Divadasa Satani Namani Trisandiyam Yaha Patinaraha Tasya vansa susiti siyat bhakti sila padam bhuje. And it says, what who chants these holy names, 12 names of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, 3 times a day achieves Krishna Prem. And it describes, if you look it up on the internet, the 12 names of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. It's a very beautiful verse, and it sums up his whole character, the character of the living force.
Yes.
He's got prem. He's the crest jewel of the sannyasis. And it just goes through like that. And,
beautiful.
It gives you that. But if you chant it 3 times a day, it's okay.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you. Okay. There's a question here at the back and then the front here. Yes, please, over there. Yeah. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Thank you so much for the class. Just had a question which my relative had about establishing the authenticity of Mahaprabhu. So firstly, what they were asking is, if we only consider Mahaprabhu as a saint rather than as Krishna himself, and only follow his instructions of, say, chanting and kirtan, then is that not enough benefit? And The other one they had was that there are many government people today who claim themselves to be gods, and they have spent a lot of resources in printing their propaganda and creating disciples and, you know, trying to establish themselves as a superior authority. So given that, like, you know, the Mahabhav, which you mentioned, is only there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and in no other scriptures, and so how can we establish the authenticity of Mahaprabhu as God?
In the world. In ISKCON, I think he has authenticity. I think in the world we have to establish. So this is where we need, you know, this is, so if devotees are inclined towards Shastra, it's there throughout the, in the Atharva Veda, there's actually the Chaitanya Upanishad, which is actually predicts Lord Chaitanya's coming. We also have in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, Gargamuni speaks about how Krishna will be golden in Kali Yuga. So the Shastric texts are there. So establishing Lord Chaitanya globally as a bona fide and most merciful incarnation, not just a saint, is shastrically very possible. Okay, academics accept. If you look at academics who study Vedic tradition, if they look at him from an academic perspective, they will say, it is said that he is an incarnate, because that's how academics speak, it is said, because there's no faith there, it's academic, right? So there are those devotees who are, they're inclined to also study Shastra in an academic way as well as a devotional way. So they can use their skills to establish in the academic fields. Then in terms of establishing Lord Chaitanya with other religious and particularly Hindu or Vaishnava communities requires understanding Shastra in a different way. And this is something I was, when we were in Mayapur recently, Shiva Maharaj was speaking about this, that we as devotees don't put so much emphasis on Shastra because we understand that just even with a few verses, with the mercy of the spiritual master and service, we can understand the purport of that. And that's the main thing. However, if those who are inclined and have ability to do so, especially when preaching in countries like India, where people know a lot of verses, maybe don't have so much faith or knowledge, you can know a lot of verses and not know anything, right? You can know the entire manual to your washing machine and still not know how to use it. Okay, the using the washing machine is very different to memorizing the manual. So it can be important service. So we have to use both. We have to show the example of, these are the results of following Lord Chaitanya. You actually achieve self-realization. We have Vaishnavas of the best character. Okay, we have the best of everything, but also defeating with logic academically, but also Shastra from a particularly Shastric and faith point of view. Now, in terms of your first question, isn't it enough to just accept his teachings as a saint? Of course it is. You just follow one of Lord Chaitanya's instructions, chant Hare Krishna, you'll go back to Godhead. But it's not accurate. And because if you're not accurate about who someone is, you don't receive them fully. And if you don't receive them fully, then you won't even receive their instructions fully. There is a difference between knowing that Krishna is telling you to chant his name versus a saint is telling you, isn't it? So, and then not even just accepting him as Krishna, but actually accepting him as, and understanding him to be Radha and Krishna combined. That we are getting, you know, the source of all things and the primary and principal reciprocator of that person combined. So, in one sense, it's enough, but it's actually not enough as well. So both things are there. Most of the time with spiritual answers, there's a yes and a no, because we want the absolute result. We don't want a relative result. So relatively, you accept him as a saint, you'll get a result. You want the absolute result, you accept him fully. He's more than just a saint. He was, because saints are what? Saints are made, right? No one's born a saint. Lord Chaitanya was perfect from even before he appeared. He wasn't even born. Does that make sense? So yeah, and we can get sentimental like that sometimes when we say we just accept. Yeah, but why? Why? Who? Because what we worship is what we get. So if we misunderstand, then we won't worship properly. Is that okay? Hare Krishna. Prabhu, can we have the mic here? How are you? You're okay? Thank you for helping us out with the verse.
No, thank you. Amazing class. I knew it'd be a good class, and it was. So thank you. it's a comment, but I'd just like you to expand anything. So what you brought up is that in our heart, that it might not actually be bhakti. We might not be actually doing it to genuinely 100% do it to please the Supreme Lord. It's in Prabhupada's book, in Nectar of Devotion. I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses this term more. Bhukti, mukti.
Yes, and siddhi.
But the bhukti, mukti, and the bhakti.
Bhukti, mukti.
So bhukti being the sense enjoyment. Mukti is that we're doing things because of it's liberation, but a sense of relief.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So sometimes we're chanting and it's just, well, Hare Krishna, oh God, what a hard day at work, Hare Krishna. Then we confuse that and thinking I'm doing, but of course we're doing the process of bhakti, but it's, so to decipher what are we actually doing so we can improve to go into the direction of bhakti, my own experiences, a little, I'm trying to work on it, is then to be able to reveal our mind in confidence to someone. And then they can bounce that back and create that discussion. But it just requires honesty to be able to see what's in the heart. And just following on that, I think this word Gyan Yoga is one of the most confusing terms in our, at least, I say ISKCON. Because some referring Gyan Yoga to impersonal realization, some think it means it's a need for scholarship or knowledge, when actually real Gyan Yoga is also highly, highly advised that we actually do learn what the philosophy is, and that's what particularly we need to go forward. So I'm not so clear on the points I've said, but they are something I've been thinking about. I've just passed that by.
Yeah. No, thank you for that. What I'm hearing from you is, whilst activities may be the same, it's really the motive that determines the result. So Gyan Yoga, yes, you're studying philosophy, but to what end? Right? Yes, we have to also be careful. Is my study of Shastra because I just enjoy collecting knowledge, or because I'm seeing how this is helping me to accept those things that are favorable, those six limbs of surrender, accept those things that are favorable, reject those things that are unfavorable? Is it making me more convinced that Krishna will give me full protection, or am I still looking for all my own solutions? Is it making me want to see and naturally see Krishna as my protector and my master? Is it allowing me to fully surrender? Is it creating humility? Or is my gyan making me hard-hearted and think I can just do things myself? Here I have the solutions. This is so cool. And that I'm no longer now humble and ready to receive. I don't have to surrender to anybody. Krishna has equipped me to just look after myself. So the bhukti, mukti, siddhis, gyan, all of these things, it's the externals of bhakti yoga can look like, because they include karma, jnana, the activities of doing, the activities of acquiring knowledge, even looking after your health, right? But our motive is this in the pursuit of becoming closer to Krishna? Is this in the pursuit of being of service to Krishna? Or is this, again, to support some kind of copy-paste? And yes, your point about revealing the mind in confidence is essential, because whether we're with friends, fans, or heroes, the six loving exchanges always stand. When Prabhupada says we need the association of pure devotees and we need the mercy of the spiritual master, how is that acquired? That's acquired through the six loving exchanges. Loving exchange means being honest. To reveal your mind in confidence and to inquire from others confidentially requires honesty. It's essential. The more we cheat with that, that we're not going to hear anything confidential. It'll be hidden. Yeah? Thank you so much for that reflection. Anyone else have any other comments or questions? Otherwise, we can send everyone to breakfast now. It's 9:10. Thank you so much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.